Department of Justice on May 7th. The next step is for the city and the Department of Justice to go into mediation. And frankly, the scuttlebutt on the inside is that no one expects the letter to be satisfactory or the mediation to be successful. So the step after that is the settlement agreement moves out of the hands of the parties, which is the City of Portland and the Department of Justice, and into the hands of a federal judge, Michael Simon, where he will have considerable powers to act, to spend money, to demote or dismiss city staff persons, police officers. He could suspend the contract with the Portland Police Association. He has tremendous powers to solve this problem and to bring this to a conclusion. So we are looking at May 7th as a pretty exciting moment to see what the city has to say about their noncompliance.
Okay, well, on that note, that will be interesting. I'm sure we'll talk more about that. I'm sure people hear a lot about that in various media. Thank you so much, Jason Renaud. I really appreciate your taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay, and that does it for Wednesday Talk Radio. This is Paul Rowland signing off. Bye, everybody.
You're listening to KBOO FM, Portland. It's 9 o'clock.
This is Jeremy Scahill, author of Dirty Wars, and you're listening to KBOO. Portland, 90.7.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Welcome to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. We feature interviews with leaders in the community focusing on issues important to Washington County.
Welcome to Inside Washington County. I'm Rob Solomon. Today, we're going to take a look at two very important services in our community, parks and recreation and library services. I think both provide excellent services in our community, and while most know some of what your organizations do, I'm not sure we're familiar with everything both programs offer. I'd like to look at those services, have our listeners gain an understanding of how our guests have managed their way through the pandemic to this point, and take a good look at what the future holds. Our guests today will help us do that. We have Doug Menke with us. Doug was appointed general manager of the Tualatin Hills Parks and Recreation District in November 2006. He has enjoyed more than 30 years of public service. Certainly hope he's enjoyed it. We've enjoyed his work at THPRD since joining the district in 1984. Doug oversees delivery of high-quality parks and recreation programs, services, and facilities to more than 230,000 people in the greater Beaverton area. We also have with us Hillary Oslin. Hillary is library director for Hillsboro Public Library. She breaks many librarian stereotypes, according to what I've read. She's an artistic and vivacious extrovert who is at her peak when engaging with library patrons and colleagues. Also from WCCLS, we have Lisa Tattersall, who serves as manager for the system, Washington County Cooperative Library Services. Moving straight to questions, I'm wondering, Doug, if you could tell us what services THPRD normally provides and how each has been impacted by the pandemic through today. We'll take a look at how you coped and responded to that in just a few moments.
Perfect. I'm happy to be here with one of our key partners, the library system. Washington counties, and of course, which I'm sure will come out later on, one of our facilities is a host of one of the branch libraries at Garden Home Recreation Center, which we've always loved that relationship. So the impact the park districts weigh, our normal operation is of course extremely vibrant, and uniquely it's as vibrant inside as it is outside. And the pandemic brought kind of a very unique circumstance, completely closed down on the inside. So whether it be our aquatic facilities, to our recreation centers, to our tennis center, to our athletic center, all of the programs within were completely shut down, of course, on the initial run. Mm-hmm. That impact was very significant to the park district, to the tune of $11 million of lost revenue. It so happened that it occurred the week of spring break was the close down, our largest single week of programming during the quote unquote rainy season. And then of course we lost the predominance of summer, which is another very, very large program area. While the following statistic is accurate, it is acknowledged that we live and die by part-time employees. And in that spring process, we lost 84% of our staff. And some of those were full-time, but the predominance were part-time employees, because we have so many instructors, that work 5 to 10 hours a week, and it fits their schedule, and it works wonderful for our ability to deliver programs. And the other end of our show, which is the unique part of the impact of COVID, is the outdoor experience. And of course, short of athletic fields being utilized, which were completely closed down until relatively recently, we had amazing activity on our trail systems and within our parks, part of which graduated through a reopening in itself, because of course playgrounds were closed off, but our trail systems were completely open, asking everyone to social distance and wear a mask and so forth. But of course the interior parks were open, but the amenities within were not. The tennis courts were not, the ball fields were not, the playgrounds were not. It certainly created some very interesting discussions, because it's really, imagine, in my case, walking my grandchildren, in many cases, parents walking their children by the play equipment that they played on all the time.
And with yellow tape across it, looking like a police situation, that was really sad. Yes.
Yeah. So that's probably an overview of what we were able to do back in the normal days, quote unquote, and the impact it had. And I can certainly speak into that next step when we're ready.
By all means, thank you. I wanted to give a look at the library situation. So I have the same question for both Lisa and Hillary. Could you answer, from your perspective, could you run through the services that you normally provide and share how each was impacted? I understand some libraries responded differently than others as well.
Yes, thanks. So happy to be here, Rob and Doug. That was super interesting. This is Hillary. So I work at the Hillsborough Public Library, super proud member of the Washington County Cooperative Library Services. And Lisa, thank you for joining me today for this. We can, I think, bring a really interesting and unique explanation to what's been going on, because our cooperative is so unique, and we work together to provide services, and Lisa will get into all of that. And I'm on the physical side of literally offering service through the buildings. And so, much like Doug described, while we don't have tennis courts or fields necessarily to think about, we've got the playing field inside the library with getting to books and getting to computers and the meeting rooms, which Rob, you used to use for this podcast. So
yes.
It's been just a year, like Doug mentioned, we shut down our buildings. I believe it was March 14th. Last year was our last day of service for inside. And, we had a lot of mourning and celebration on the anniversary this year, because we could remember how hard the year's been, but also celebrate how much we were able to still do for the community. And I'm happy to say that 1 year later, we are now open for indoor browsing, of course, with limited capacity and some time limits, which I'm sure we'll get into as this interview progresses. But yeah, impacted services for sure. Our staff remained super vigilant, and honestly, the overused word of resilient comes to mind. We never gave up. We were so committed to pivoting and looking for new ways of doing online access and, you know, getting into like outreach visits, expanding ways to get summer reading books to kids. So we tried to always look at the silver lining that this opportunity provided us, but it's been tough, and we have missed our patrons so much, and we're so happy to be welcoming them back indoors now at Hillsborough Library. But there's a lot to unpack there, and I'm happy to go into detail as the questions progress. Lisa?
Thank you. Lisa, did you have anything to add?
Yeah, so as Hillary was mentioning, Washington County Cooperative Library Services, we're a wonderful partnership, and I'll talk a little bit about what WCCLS does and then the structure of the cooperative, because I think it's always good to explain that. I'm the manager of a department of Washington County, and we provide funding, support services, and infrastructure to bring all of these independently operated libraries together into one system so that anyone in the county can use any library in the county. So it's one card. One analogy would be like our libraries are a lovely soup, and WCCLS is the bowl that holds them all together. And my hope is that together with all of the work that we do is that we are better than the sum of our parts, just like soup. It tastes better after you cook it together for a long time. And we've been working together in this partnership for over, I think it's 40 years now, 45, I think, this year, actually. And so we've been a long simmering soup, and WCCLS is the bowl that is very pleased to kind of bring everything together. And so what we do at WCCLS, like just a real quick overview, is we, like I said before, we provide funding. And so I'll talk a little bit about our levy that was on the ballot in May 2020, which was a really interesting time to be on the ballot for library services. So funding is a big part of what we provide to the libraries across the system. And we also provide all of the IT infrastructure that links us all together. We provide the courier system, which is, we sort books and deliver them across the system. And that's what enables you to, you know, check out a book in Tigard and return it at Hillary's library in Hillsborough. We have all of the sort of online interfaces. So when you search our catalog and place a hold, all of that is provided by WCCLS. And then, and I'll talk about this later too, I'm sure it'll come up, we provide all of the digital content. So all of the eBooks, audiobooks, streaming video, all of that is much more efficient to deliver at the countywide level. And so my team provides that for everyone. And we obviously saw a bonkers amount of usage and are continuing to see a bonkers amount of usage of our digital content. So that's just kind of some of the things we do at WCCLS. And I kind of gave you a bit of an overview in terms of how we responded. Because we don't have a public service interface, like I said, we're the bowl sort of, not the actual soup. We're behind the scenes most of the time. And so the vast majority of my team, about 35-ish people, have been working remotely since a year ago. And we have a few people in the building. Our materials movement folks need to be in the building. And so we salute them, and they've done an excellent job throughout a challenging time doing really physical work, schlepping, 7,500 books a day we're sorting right now, and schlepping those between libraries wearing a mask all day is not pleasant. And they've done wonderful work to keep us moving. But the rest of us have been battling it out with our spouses and pets and kids, or enjoying all that together time and working remotely. And I'm really proud of our IT team. We have a really small and mighty IT team that supports this whole countywide network and supports our department of about 35 to 40 people. And they pivoted us to a fully remote environment in an amazing amount of time, like a couple of weeks. It was incredible.
Now that's excellent. And as a part of that response to the terrible virus, the pandemic, I appreciate how you guys handled that, do things online. We'll get to Doug in a second, but I wanted to pursue something. He mentioned that he lost 84% of his employees. I'm wondering, did you guys, either at the Hillsborough Library itself, or through WCCLS, did you lose people? I understand people work from home, but I don't know if everybody was kept on, or how did that impact your employees?
You want me to go first, Lisa? Okay. Yeah, and this is something that's different in every jurisdiction, and I think every city, nonprofit, organization that had to work through this in such a weird and unprecedented time is just, we need to give them props, because everybody was so people focused, who I know in every library and jurisdiction. So my deep credit to everybody who had to make some tough decisions. At Hillsborough, our city, so we're a city department, the library. Mm-hmm. And like Lisa said, part of the soup at Washington County. So we do have the two organizations, but we are City of Hillsborough employees. And the City of Hillsborough was very committed to keeping staff employed. We allowed for work from home when it made sense, and we worked really hard to get people back to work as soon as possible when it didn't quite make sense. So we also have the people who do our shelving and our book and material movement and maintenance, and they needed to get back as soon as possible. So we worked quickly to assemble tasks for them to do when it was safe to be in the buildings. The people who were impacted on our staffing roster, who we call like our on-call substitutes, much like Doug's instructors who work a few hours a week, we have some of those too. So we put them on like a pause. We're just bringing them back now, so I'm really happy they're starting to fill some hours as we're getting more open. But we were able to retain everybody and find kind of a hybrid work life for most people. Now we're all back in the buildings serving customers inside and outside of the buildings through our outreach visits, and looking at, you know, even some hiring that we're about to do now that we have a couple of vacancies that we kind of held during the pandemic to see what we would need. So happy to say that we were able to retain everybody here at the City of Hillsborough.
And throughout the system, Lisa?
Yeah, I think I don't want to speak, you know, exactly for other libraries. Like Hillary was saying, we're a partnership of the county, 9 cities and 3 nonprofits. But my understanding is that libraries were able to retain their permanent staff, and those on-call sub staff were the ones who may have lost hours. At WCCLS, our department, we did not. It was a priority to keep everyone working, and we had plenty to do. So it was an incredibly busy time for us, and it's actually been a very you know, we've been working a lot, and so yeah, there's been no shortage of work for us. And again, we're fortunate in that way because we are behind the scenes, and a lot of the work we do is, you know, can be done remotely, that we've been really busy and have kept everyone hopping, which is good. We're very fortunate.
And it sounds like most of those people that were sort of shelved for a little while, if I could put it that way, are coming back for you, which leads me to Doug. Doug, 84% were lost. So many are part-time. They needed to do something else. Are you getting them back as you're reopening?
Yeah, certainly. We now have, you know, 5+ facilities open in some level, of course, you know, given the guidelines, provision of the guidelines and so forth. So yeah, there's some significant rehiring in process, and certainly for summer, we envision that as well. You know, very uniquely, during the core of the pandemic, we won a very significant grant from Washington County, our Community Psyche Fund, and that was literally $420,000 to enable gatherings throughout the community that were obviously followed COVID guidelines, but were touch points with our community. And they ranged anywhere from our mobile rec programming, you know, going out to less advantaged communities. We reached out with a variety of events from, you know, anywhere from superheroes in the parks to chalk on the parks to music in the neighborhoods. We did a lot of welcoming walks with cultural partners that we have. We did a mammoth Halloween drive-through that backed up traffic. Well, I won't say it out loud, but it was a success. Let's put it that way. And then, of course, that mobile rec program literally is a program on wheels. It pulls up to could be an affordable housing project. It could be just simply underserved areas, pockets within our community to deliver. And partnership all along was the key. We did some really unique things on talking walls as well during this same time period where, you know, many people were limited what they could do, but going outside was still safe if you wore a mask, kept your distance. So in two specific sites, Sunset Park, right next to Sunset High School, and Greenway, next to Greenway Elementary, we did a talking wall program that really expressed solidarity for racial and social justice reform. And we did it with community partners. So we partnered with Color Outside the Lines at Sunset High, which was part connection with the Black Student Union at Sunset High. And then, of course, at Greenway, we utilized Native American Family and Youth Center to enable that. And really, it was messages of peace, of hope, solidarity. So it was really, it was unique during that time period where we were pretty handcuffed in what we could do, mm-hmm. but we felt it really critical, and we were enabled by Washington County's funding source to still deliver to the community.
So both organizations were able to pivot and kind of pull a silk purse out of the sow's ear, or whatever that phrase is. Let's go with silver lining out of the cloud, not the apple cloud. As we deal with issues of reopening, and as we're taping today, that's really what we're looking at. We're still in the midst of the pandemic, and in fact, there's talk of a third or fourth wave, depending on how you count it, with those variants, et cetera. Assuming we escape that wave, what protocols are we looking at for patrons to follow during the current reopening phase? And will maintaining those protocols encourage participation or keep patrons hesitant about returning? Doug, I'd like to ask you first.
Sure, I appreciate that. The fact of the matter is, I think it is, that is one of the mysterious items we're going to have to wait and see, and that is the comfort level of the public. Because last summer, we launched a summer camp program, and it didn't look at all like the norm, you know, very small pods, everyone wearing masks, and it was, for the size we offered up, it was reasonably successful, but it was literally 11% of the normal capacity we have. And we did not fill every spot. So that sure. that was part of that awakening that, you know, regardless of the quality of the program you do open up, the public has to be ready. Parents have to be ready to release their children. So effectively, we are going to launch kind of that same process this summer, and respecting all of the COVID guidelines. You know, I think we will get a reasonable response. It will not be the normal response. And we have to respect that some parents are not gonna be there yet. And the reality is that we don't know all the answers we need to know, you know? And if you were to count, Rob, the last 7 days of counts for Washington County, we're moving up, and it's mm-hmm. it's not ideal. We're a little concerned. We may bump up a level before we go down again, but we're hopeful as well that we are moving certainly in the right pattern with the vaccine and everyone still being as responsive as they can be, that we're going to continue to open facilities as we move forward and regain as best we can all the programming we can indoors, but certainly take advantage of our spring and summer coming up.
Understood. Thank you. Lisa, what about, from your perspective, library system-wide, what about the reopening and people following protocols? Do you think that people are ready, are you seeing that now, to come back and take advantage of the services at the various libraries? Or are they saying, just a minute now, I want to make sure everybody is vaccinated and we've got herd immunity, et cetera, et cetera. What are your thoughts?
I think we're seeing all of the above in that, you know, all of us as individuals have our own comfort level and our own priorities and all of that in terms of how we choose to engage with activities. This is such a unique and challenging time. And so what I think is so wonderful about what our libraries are doing is they're doing the best they can with the sort of staffing limitations they have. The square footage limitations are real. I think for those small libraries, you know, we have such, you know, there's only so many people you can have in a building at one time. And for our really small libraries, that makes it incredibly challenging. And we do have some tiny libraries in our system. And so with all of those constraints, libraries are doing their best to, offer either curbside service where you can take out basically where you're able to pick up your books the doors, and then they're all sort of working towards limited in-person browsing inside the building, and some are already there, especially our bigger facilities that have more space to do so. And so they're all of our libraries are on a continuum of service levels right now, and they're all moving towards that in a hopeful and optimistic way, also keeping in mind protocols. And I suspect that our public is like that too. There's some who are chomping at the bit to get out there and get browsing, and there are others who are maybe a little more cautious, and I'm or waiting till they get vaccinated, and that's okay. And so we're here to support people in whatever way we can. And I believe, like, even the libraries that are moving to in-person browsing are still doing what they can to serve people who are remote. I know at WCCLS, for example, like I said, we provide all of the ebooks, audiobooks, and downloadable video and all of that. That usage has gone up 40% since, you know, the before times pre-pandemic. It's been massive, and it's really exciting for us to see people, you know, sign up for cards online and access these resources. And so we're so pleased we're able to offer that option for people who really want to stay remote. And then we're also so pleased that we have libraries like Hillsborough and Beaverton in particular, who are and Cornelius, there's a bunch, but that they're sort of really on the moving towards that in-person limited browsing side. And so I feel like we're able to accommodate a great range as part of that diversity of our system.
People are getting vaccinated, some are not. Some are waiting to get vaccinated, and some are refusing to get vaccinated. We're going to have two distinct groups out there. Will we issue vaccination passports? In essence, I'm asking if people who can prove they've been fully vaccinated will be separated from those who can't, or treated differently in any way by either of your organizations. Doug, we'll go to you first, if you don't mind.
So, it's a great question, but of course it is it is one of those topics that many times, I'll use the comparison of soccer. We ran into a circumstance, we're in the midst of the discussion right now, and that is that kids are able to run around our youth on our soccer fields and play. And it has been an absolute, I'm sure many of you, as you drive around the community and actually see youth out on fields again, is remarkable. The challenge, of course, is present protocol via the state is that spectators cannot without four or five additional bullets being addressed. And those are all kinds of access points that are separate from the players. They are restroom capacity that players and spectators are not to use the same restrooms. And these are great examples where I've had to answer many a phone call and email on subject matters that I don't get to control. They are controlled by protocol by the state. And I think respectfully, the answer to your question, Rob, is that we will follow state guidance. And that's the best we're going to be able to do because so far, I think anyway, the state has managed it well. Washington County has come through for us time and time again with clarifications, enabling, simply the grant opportunity we have was just a wonderful opportunity to reach people. And we're going to be reliant on our officials that really are specialists in this area.
Understood, appreciated. Same question to the library folks. Lisa, what do you think? Passports?
I'm going to have a similar answer to Doug in that I think this is really something that we take direction in terms of all things pandemic from our experts and our authorities, whether that's the OHA or Health and Human Services here in Washington County. And we've really looked to them for guidance all along the way. And we will continue to do so with this issue. And so, I think it really is following their lead and their direction.
Well, understood. And I we're running out of time. There's more things we can talk about, but I want to take this moment, please, to thank you very much, all three of you, for joining us today. I know that I knew before we talked that the services were important, not just to me, but to our community. And I so much appreciate how much work you guys have done. If I may, I also want to thank THPRD for its cooperation with the fire and EMT folks in putting on a clinic over at 158th and Walker. I think that's great in helping to reach more people. And when organizations do that, I think they should be recognized. So thank you. And to our listeners, if you have any comments on this program, please feel free to get in touch with us through our website and be kind and gentle. Thank you so much. We'll see you all next week.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Mark Berry. Thank you.